Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Time to meet my first guest, Jess Collins. Now, we have an enviable cultural and musical heritage in the West Midlands, but how do we preserve it for future generations? Jess Collins is from the Birmingham Music Archive, who have long campaigned for a physical museum in the city to celebrate the artists, venues and gigs that have narrated our musical story. That wish is about to come true with a new development in Digbeth. Jess, a very warm welcome to Friday Night Clive.
Good evening, Clive. Thank you for having me. Hello, listeners.
Thank you very much for joining me. Now, we said that this has been a long-held dream for you. You're clearly a music fan. Tell me about your history and where did you get your passion from, particularly for Birmingham's musical history?
Okay, so I've been around a long, long time. Never played any musical instruments, never sang, never been in a band.
Oh, right.
So, you know, completely non-musical in that sense. But a lot of friends were in bands, and I'd go and see those bands, you know, back in the 80s in places like the Barrel Organ and the Mermaid in Birmingham, come over to the Black Country, to Wolverhampton Civic Hall, Walsall.
Well, I remember the Barrel Organ.
Yeah, the Barrel, know, yeah. So
going back a bit,
quite a few days, or years, I should say. And so being around music, and I worked in the creative industries in Birmingham, I've had a fairly peripatetic career, so I've been around.
What sort of things were you doing?
Oh, gosh, I've worked at the Arts Council, I've worked at the City Council, I've run recording studios with friends, done a lot of youth engagement work, so young people who've committed crime or marginalised out of school, so we had a recording studio where they come and record, and you know, we'd work with them about alternative careers. I've worked at marketing. I have owned my own bar in Bearwood, so I actually live in the Black Country now. So I've done a lot of different things, but always been in and around the creative industries, and music's been at the heart of that. And 12, 15 years or so ago, I had a meeting at the Central Library in Birmingham. And at the time, that was the most popular public library in Europe. 5,000-6,000 people would go in a day. And I was a little bit early for my meeting, so I thought I'd go to the music section and just see what was there that talked about Birmingham that you could either borrow, lend or find out about. And there wasn't anything. So at the end of the meeting, I just pitched an idea. I said, would you be interested in doing some sort of project? I didn't know what it would be, just something that would help capture, preserve and educate and tell people about Birmingham's music heritage. And they were really keen, but local authority, no money. So I just started the Birmingham Music Archive myself. It was an online site. Didn't really know what I was doing. And it was really a way, what I was really keen to do was to ask people what was important to them. So rather than me trying to say, this is the history of Birmingham music, you know, you'd ask people, say, well, you tell us what's important to you. Where are the places that you used to go? What are the bands that you used to go and see? Because a bit like myself, I'm pretty sure that not many people know about Nigel the Spoon. They were a really important band to me. I'd go to the Barrel Organ that we both would go to. 30 other people look at this band, you know, be there to see Nigel the Spoon, or Egyptian Fringe was another great band. And, you know, they never really released any music, didn't get famous, didn't go touring around the world or anything like that. But they were really important to me at that time. They're important in terms of the music and the friendship and the camaraderie and the places that I'd go to. And I wanted to sort of celebrate that, really. That was just the idea. But it snowballed and quite a lot. And what we found, or what I found, was that people were just really keen to send in and talk about either themselves or, again, their friends or, again, the places and spaces that they went to. So I knew a little bit about Birmingham music. You know, I think I had a good understanding of it. But what really amazed me was that all that knowledge and passion was out there in the community, and they were keen to tell those stories.
And of course you were thriving off that, because that's what led you to start this up, really.
Absolutely. And I was aware, you know, at the same time, I was aware that, you know, places like Manchester and Liverpool, Bristol, Sheffield, Glasgow, London particularly as well, would often talk about their, you know, music as part of the city. So they, you know, Manchester, you know, home of Oasis or the Smiths or the Joy Division or New Order, Liverpool, the Beatles, etc. So there'd always be that link to their music culture. And we didn't do that in Birmingham or the West Midlands, and we'll talk about the West Midlands in a bit. And I was just like, we need to do this, because
Why do you think people weren't doing that?
I don't know. I have to be honest, I don't know. I think, you know, I think some people were doing it, some people were keen to sort of recognise it, but it just didn't seem to be important enough to, you know, ever who, you know, the people in power, whether that's the city council or, you know, some of the other agencies, the museums, the libraries, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it's oftentimes, isn't it, Clive, that it takes one or two people to say something or do something, and then it gets that traction. So I was perhaps just lucky, I was at the right place, right time, had an idea, followed it through, and the result has been amazing. As I said, you know, we have 10,000 odd people who get in touch with us regularly, who send us photographs, flyers, posters, recordings, cassette tapes, memories. So the desire's out there in the community to tell those stories and to celebrate them. And now we're trying to move that onto the next level. And I think, you know, if I go back to Liverpool, it's not just to say, well, we should celebrate it, but Liverpool and Beatles tourism, and of course the Beatles are the Beatles, you know, the probably most famous band in the world, but that supports 3,500 jobs. It brings in £193 million into that city each year. You know, people come from far and wide to look at the places where the Beatles played and recorded or sang about. And I think we can do the same in this city and this region. I think it's a massive way to bring tourists in to learn and understand about the city. And of course, while they're here learning about the music, they'll go to a gig, they'll stay in a hotel, they'll go for a beer, for some food. So, you know, there's another side to it.
It helps the economy.
It absolutely helps the economy.
Let's name drop then. Let's throw some names of bands or artists into the mix then. Who are we talking about now?
Well, you've just played Fleetwood Mac, so I don't know how many people know that Christine McVeigh, you know, lived nearly all her life in Bearwood. And she started in a band called Chicken Shack, which was a sort of Stourbridge band.
Right.
And it was, you know, as playing as part of them, that she was poached by Peter Green for Fleetwood Mac, and he saw them at the Crown Pub in the city centre. You've got, of course, you've got Black Sabbath. And I'm going to stick to Birmingham just for the moment.
Okay.
And we'll come back onto the Black Country. But Black Sabbath, you know, ELO, The Move, Spencer Davis Group, you know, The Streets, Duran Duran, Fine Young Cannibals, Joan Armour Trading, someone they might not know, Stanley Myers. And Stanley Myers is a really interesting character. Stanley Myers was a guitarist, a classical guitarist. People will not know him, but if people have ever seen the film The Deer Hunter, the famous opening song, Stanley Myers wrote that. He wrote soundtracks for lots of films, and just a real hidden person. Dexys Midnight Runners, probably my favourite band. I've got a T-shirt.
Hence the T-shirt, absolutely.
The Felt, who I absolutely love. You know, I could go on and on. That's absolutely, you know, tons of them.
But it's interesting you mentioned Stanley Myers, because we think about popular artists in the way that you just described, but, you know, you've got classical artists as well.
Yeah, Nigel Kennedy, you know, one of the biggest, you know, most famous classical. He straddles that classical, popular sort of boundary,
sure.
But, you know, did wonders for classical music. Did wonders for,
oh, absolutely.
For them, you know.
You're saying about Fleetwood Mac. Michael from Bearwood's got in touch. He says, I can remember the days of so many great venues in the region. I used to go to Mother's and saw a band called Fleetwood Mac. I think they did some stuff after that live, and it shaped my enjoyment of music from years to come. And a museum is so sorely needed. And Terry got in touch with me from Edgbaston, says, I love looking through the Archives Facebook group, and I'll come on to that in a second, and seeing the history of music in our great city. A big thank you to Jez and others for the work that they do. I can't wait to see the museum. Now, looking back at the Archives Facebook group, it's a great mix of those really big bands that we've just been talking about, and some lesser-known ones as well. And we've talked about a lot of the big bands and the big gigs. Let's think about the people that we wouldn't necessarily know or associate with. We'll, as I say, we'll stick to Birmingham now. Give me some examples of other musicians and bands.
So let's move outside musicians just for a second.
Okay.
And we're sitting in the Black Country Radio. We're in Resonance Building, which is a new popular music college, university. And one of the founders of Resonance is a guy called Chris Cronin. Chris Cronin is the director and founder of a company called Total Trust Solutions. They make massive rigging for gigs all around the world. They're one of the preeminent music businesses in the world who specialise in sort of the lighting rigs and stage design. No one would ever know about him. Now, I make that point because what's important to me is not just the famous Black Sabbaths and the famous venues, but there's a whole musical culture and infrastructure and ecosystem around music. So I'm really interested in people like Chris the managers, the record shops and the owners where we go. I'm interested in the people who worked in bars, in Mothers, because they all have stories to tell, and all those stories add up to a really fantastic and incredible narrative. And it's a way of, for me, of understanding the city and its communities. But let's go back to music and let's talk about someone like Bally Sugu, who people might not know.
I know that name.
Yes, so Bally Sugu is massive in Asian music, you know, huge in Bollywood. I bet a bottom dollar not that many people in Birmingham would know about him. Or Apna Sangeeta, another sort of fantastic
My friend's parents, I'm going to name drop, Naheed Nahazi and Muslihuddin.
Yeah.
They're very famous Pakistani people. They were film stars, they were children's presenters in Pakistan, came to the West Midlands and carried on with that. They knew all the famous people. When they used to come around, come to Birmingham, all the West Midlands gigging, Naheed or Uncle, as we used to call them, Uncle and Auntie, would actually see them and hang out with them.
It's amazing. So let's pick up on that Pakistani link and talk about Muhammad Ayub, who started Oriental Star Records. Oriental Star Records were based in a tiny shop on, in Borsal Heath, but were probably the first and definitely the most important Asian record label. And they were the first people to release Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan's music. Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan was a Qawwali singer from Pakistan. Ended up signing for Peter Gabriel's Real World label, but only because of the connection with Oriental Star Records. So it's those fascinating things that, you know, people might not like the music, might not know about it, but Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan he's passed now, but was a global star in that devotional music that would go and play at WOMAD. Peter Gabriel absolutely loved him, and he started out by coming to a small shop in Borsal Heath, playing in small terraced houses in Borsal Heath, and then became, like I say, this global star. So there's all these fascinating hidden histories and heritage that I'm trying to bring to the surface. And I'm trying to do that because I think Birmingham is actually unique for music culture in this country. I've mentioned Liverpool and Manchester and all those other fantastic cities that have great music culture. But the way that Birmingham developed, particularly post-war, with the Irish, with Asian, or particularly South Asian, or Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Indian, with Afro-Caribbean communities and African communities, when they came in to help rebuild the city and work in the foundries or the buses or the hospitals, they would bring their culture with them. So someone like Andy Hamilton, for example, you know, one of the great jazz musicians, again, you know, past, I don't think particularly well known in this city. But those communities would bring their culture with them. One of their strongest cultures was music. And Birmingham population would literally live and work and play with them. So one side you might have a black family, you'd hear reggae bass lines come out of the sound systems. On the other side you might hear Punjabi folk music or prayer music, and in the middle you'd have a white family maybe playing rock, and they all mixed and fused.
Music's a universal language. I mean, you say you're not musical, I am, so I can read music and I play a couple of instruments, so you can take that music and you can go to wherever and put it in front of somebody that can read music, and you have that instant connection. And I think that happened.
Yeah, but even if you can't, what's interesting about the archive site, lots of us aren't musicologists. So we say, oh, we like that record, but we don't talk about the minor fifth or, you know, a particular chord or the tone or quality of someone's voice. You know, we just say we like it. But you're absolutely right. Music is the anchor. So from that discussion about music, about, oh, I like this band or I like that sound, people talk about themselves and their friends or their neighbours. So it's a great starting off point to talk about many different things. And that's what's fascinating about music. It is that universal language, whether we can read it, play it, or just like it, it's a way in to people. And I think, you know, as I say, that incredible fusion of living, you know, we're not far from Smethwick and the foundries, you know, bordered Handsworth. So again, you'd have, you know, it's a great story about Tony Iommi, you know, for example, and Black Sabbath. If you listen to Tony, he says, well, I worked in the foundries, so, and all that heat and noise and sounds and smells, I had to come out and play loud sort of metal music. And that's true for Tony, but I know he would be working next to a black and an Asian colleagues, and they weren't coming out and making metal. They would come out and play, you know, make ska music or blue beat music or reggae or, again, Punjabi folk or Bhangra music. So what's true for one person in one place is not true for everyone. And it's that fusion and that connection to people and that closeness to people, I think, is unique and makes our music unique in this city. And it's been continual for 60 or 70 years. You know, we keep turning out these amazing musicians, these amazing venues, these amazing managers. And that's what's, you know, fascinating, I think. And I think people are starting to sort of recognise that. As we get older, we look back a little bit, you know, and things that we did in our youth, you know, and we want to sort of remember that. So again, it's another great way of saying to people, well, talk about yourself. You know, you're important, as important as Tony Iommi.
Absolutely. Siobhan in Dudley's got in touch. She says, what I love about the local music scene is the carefree attitude. I wonder, well, we'll explore what you mean, Siobhan, by carefree attitude in a moment. But she goes on to say, the way we appreciate our stars and our workers, and we can see people like Robert Plant walking through Maryhill or playing in a pub, but the total lack of hysteria and appreciation is uniquely Brummy. But an interesting point there, Siobhan. But you know what? How would you say about a carefree attitude, Jez?
I think just listen to that comment. I think Siobhan sort of hit the nail on the head, and it's both a blessing and a curse, because I think another way of describing the carefree is that we don't shout about our history and heritage. So again, I don't want to, you know, keep going back to Liverpool and Manchester. They're very, you know, forward about talking about their successes, and quite rightly. And we don't tend to do that in this area, actually, not this city, but this area. We're very reserved, and we get on, we have a get on and do it attitude. So that's why I think Robert Plant can go to the Wolves and walk through Maryhill, and people go, oh, you know, all right, Robert, but they won't hassle him. You know, he can live his life. I think there's elements that, you know, we are a bit close to London. So it's very easy, particularly for musicians, to go down to London and record and come back, or to leave the city. So that carefree attitude for me is more of a just an inherent. It's something in us. I haven't got the answer. It's something in us that means that we're very, I wouldn't say reserved, but we're just very matter of fact. And it, you know, whether it's our surroundings, whether it's the industrial heritage that we have, and the conditions that, you know, people worked in, and how we lived our lives. It's just that, okay, good on you. Yeah, great that you've done well, but don't forget who you are and where you're from.
That's true. I mean, I've always said, you know, never forget where you come from. Never forget where you start out, regardless of what you do in life. I've had another email from Nina, which I'll come on to in a second. Keep your emails coming in. All of these stories will be encapsulated, finally, in the museum in the next few years. This has been a passion project for you, clearly. But it didn't happen overnight. How long has it taken you to get to this stage?
Well, yeah, 15 years or so, I think. Lots of research.
Not overnight, then.
Not overnight, and we're still 3 or 4 years away from having to make it happen. But the museum, I hope, will be a space and a place that, as we've just talked about, that people can come into and see themselves reflected on the walls. People who look like them, who talk like them, who live where they live, who went into school where they went to school, who worked where they work, and they can see, oh, they look like me, talk like me, I can also aspire to be like them. And I'd like the museum to be populated by the things that I know people really keep close to them. So the posters, the flyers. I'm less interested in glass cases in terms of museums.
I agree. So
interested in, you know, you've seen one guitar, you've seen them all, and you can't do anything with it. So it's about the connection and the emotional connection that we have. And I'm hoping, first of all, that the museum, that the people in the city and the region, you know, learn more about the contributions that they've made and others like them have made to global music. And I want people who come into the city to visit it to also learn that, but also to see and learn more about us and what makes us unique across the region. So that's the vision for the museum at the moment.
Tell me about the museum then, what we can actually expect to find when it's built. Okay, you're not going to have necessarily guitars in glass cases, but is it, you're saying it's purely historical, but you're going to put things like memorabilia in there, and, you know, audio clips, and we can actually go through and we can walk through different genres, different times of music, I guess, in performance spaces, things like that.
Yeah, so there's two elements to the, I mean, there's a lot of work to do now about how this actually manifests itself, but the idea being that I'd like to populate it with we started off as a digital archive, so people would just send us scans, etc. And over the last 5 years or so, we've had more and more physical materials come in. So that's pushed the idea about having a physical museum. It's a bit like, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And it's always people say, well, we're going to chuck it out. Like, I'll have it.
Don't.
I'll have it, and then I'll work out what I'm going to do with it. So there'll be an element of that, of those. So, of course, I think people want to know about Black Sabbath or Joan Armatrading or Duran Duran. So they'll be incorporated. But what I hope to do is that people come in, they can navigate the space almost like the city, so they can understand where people come from and what happened in those areas. At the moment, we're thinking about the 10 sort of parliamentary wards of Birmingham, and we need to talk about the West Midlands, which we will do in a second if we've got time. So that's the first thing, and it'll be made up of those materials. So people will send in photographs, we'll send in posters, we'll send in flyers. We've made 2-3 films, we've got loads of video footage, film footage. There are hundreds of millions of videos on YouTube that we can stream. So there's ways of doing it, of creating a museum that is relatively cheap, but actually, as I say, has that emotional connection. The second part is that I'd like to have a space that we offer to the community. So if you're in a band or you're in a scene, that you can come down and do, so you can bring your guitars and you can bring your sound systems, or it might be, and have an exhibition about your particular area or your particular scene. We'll do talks, we'll do launches, etc. So it's more of a community space, making that connection to the community. So that's how it's shaping up at the moment. There's a lot of work to do about feasibilities and business plans and all those things.
Well,
but how do you make
it? Where's all the money coming from, Jez? Because this is going to cost you millions, surely.
No, I don't think it will. So in my previous life, I was an academic, so I've done a lot of research around museums and the idea about how you move away from traditional museums. So if you are going to have glass cases, if Tony Iommi says, here's a guitar, and if he's listening, Tony, I'd love to have your guitar, I'm not going to turn it down. But if you go down that route, then that is really expensive, because you need a lot of space. You need space to keep materials that you're not going to exhibit in, you know, archive conditions. So that's all about, you know, temperature control and all those sorts of things. You need to have a huge space to have the glass cases, and that is, you know, that is expensive. What we're doing is taking and asking people to donate those things that they have held on to for whatever reason, and say, okay, let's put those into the museum. Let's build up a reservoir of those sorts of materials, and we can just repurpose them. We can do different types of exhibitions, so we can rotate and we can keep it fresh. People can see themselves. We can talk about scenes or genres, whatever we want to do it. The building is being built for us, so we've been working with a developer called Coldwater House, who are a Manchester-based organisation. They're going to build the building. They've offered us 50% of the market rent in perpetuity, so that becomes then much more affordable. So if I think the for the first year, the rent is going to be about £48,000, which sounds a lot, but actually for the space where it is,
that's not bad.
It's not bad at all. We're sharing the space with the Museum of Youth Culture, so we bring the cost down there. We'll have a cafe and a bar, so there's revenue. So we have been thinking about it quite closely, about, you know, how do we sustain it and how do we populate it. And I think it's going to be in the thousands, and it may be going to the hundreds of thousands, but not, I don't think it's anywhere near even £1 million.
And I mean, are you trying to source income and revenue at the moment to help with the cost?
Yeah, we're at the very beginning of that journey. Until the museum and the development went through planning, it was not really much point doing anything. It went through planning last week, so it's very, very fresh, and we've had loads of people get in touch offering us materials, which is great, and also a worry, like, okay, need to get think about where we're going to store them all. But yes, you know, it'd be great to find a sponsor. Again, we're not talking huge amounts of money. Again, you'll know this is through, you know, through work in radio. You know, that's can be hard to do. You know, there's less money around, mm-hmm. particularly for cultural. You're not going to make money in a museum. You know, it's not going to be a return on investment. So this is very much about someone, as we spoke about earlier, putting something back into the city, whether it's a musician or whether it's a business or businesses that want to, you know, support, you know, a Birmingham Music Museum at the very early stage and have their name and all the associations with that. So, yeah, we have to do business planning is where mm-hmm. we're at now. And we have to look at what our sustainability is and where our funding comes from and how we generate income.
But other than partnership agencies that you're working with, as you've said, the people in Manchester, who else is working with you on this? How many people have you got? He counts on one.
One, me.
So it is literally just me, the Jez Collins show.
Yes, so the archive, we are not, so I don't know if people know this, but at cultural organisations, there's public funding through the Arts Council and different types of streams. We don't get regular funding, so my wages aren't paid, or we don't get money to go and buy things. So I have to raise that money, and I've done that for the last 3 or 4 years solely as, you know, that's my only income. So I have to think about the projects, do the projects, find the materials, blah blah blah, all that sort of stuff, which gives me confidence that we'll be able to do the museum. We will absolutely need to think about staffing. You know, that's a given. You know, so we have to factor that into our costs. But at the moment, as you say, it's a passion or a labour of love, even maybe is a better phrase to say. But there are examples all across the world of this happening. So I'm just taking those models and seeing, okay, how do they work? You know, what do they do to keep their survival? How do they make money? How can we take some of those things and learn and incorporate them into the Birmingham Music Museum? So again, I'm really confident that we can do this. I think, actually, just looking at the response that we've had in the last 6 days, I already think we might need a bit more bigger space. You know, we haven't even opened, but I think there's a scope to grow it. At the moment it's just me, but people across, you know, as I mentioned earlier, 10,000 odd people who are active on Facebook on the actual archive site, who get involved by sending in things, by uploading materials, and that's how people can get involved. That's an amazing start. And then we can go down content. So, oh, I just seen you posted this. Can you talk about it more? Or let's make a film about this particular area. Or, you know, so there's ways of doing it.
I bet you must meet yourself coming backwards sometimes, don't you, with us?
Yes, yeah. And then it's like a boomerang, yeah.
When are you going to hopefully open the doors then, Jess?
2025.
Right, okay.
So that's the date we're looking at. Again, if you imagine there's a lot of work to do in terms of this development. So it's part of a huge development of flats and commercial spaces, a new park. Things can be delayed. But at the moment, if everything goes according to plan, 2025 will be the start date.
Just want to go back to Nina's email. Nina from Stourbridge. I'm just mindful of the time as well. Nina says, I remember visiting the Royal Turf in Stourbridge, down an alleyway at what's now a pizza restaurant, and seeing huge stars leaning against the wall. It's so surreal to see it now with children and kids and youths walking past and not realising the heritage. So that's typical of the example you made earlier.
Absolutely, that connection. And we're losing them, you know, things change, but it's how do we preserve them and celebrate them? I think, you know, the museum and the archive will do that. And I know we're just about to run out of time, but one last point, because it's an interesting and quite a taxing point for me, is that it's called the Birmingham Music Archive, and we're concentrating on Birmingham, but the region, the Black Country region, West Midlands, has a massive, massive history. And my issue is, or my challenge is, how do I bring the Black Country, which is proud of its heritage? I live in the Black Country, you know, we're proud of our heritage. So how do I bring in bands like, I don't know, Slade or Robert Plant into a Birmingham Music Archive? Because I'm not sure if people in the Black Country would want to be labelled, or their musical culture labelled as Birmingham. So that's a question to throw out there.
But the two areas go together. People often use the tagline Birmingham and the Black Country. You know, here in the Black Country, we're neighbours with Birmingham. Yep. We're part of that West Midlands conurbation. So I think anybody in the right mindset would jump at the chance to do that.
Well, that's really encouraging to hear. I hope that's the case, because I'd love to extend that out to, you know, the work that I do. I'd love to extend it out to the Black Country. I think if you're looking at a visitor attraction, I think it has to be called the Birmingham Music Museum to gain that traction. And that's where the slight difficulties could lie. But I'm open to suggestions, to people getting in touch saying, no, do it, or no, think about this, or get lost. There's no way we want to, you know, Slade don't belong in a Birmingham Music Museum. We should have a Wolverhampton Museum. Whatever people think, it's all good research and all good, you know, challenges.
But I think it's important to showcase that talent, as you said, over 60, 70 years, yeah, you say, possibly,
yeah,
right across the wider West Midlands. Now, if I came round to your house and we got the beers open or whatever, and I was starting to look through your music collection, what would I see and why?
Okay, music collection, you would see, it's about 5,000 at the moment, I think. It's a mixture of about 2,000 pieces of vinyl and about 3,000 CDs. And you'd see a mix right across the board. So, you know, I was brought up listening to Bob Dylan with my mum and dad, and that sticks with me to this day. You would see my record collection in alphabetical order, but also in genre order. So you would see hip-hop, soul, funk, gospel, punk, rock, metal, indie, folk, jazz. I'm pretty sure I've missed some other world music, and they're incontinence. So I have a really, really, really broad music taste, but some of the, I can hand on heart say some of my favourite music comes from this region. Love Slade, you know, I've just been listening to the Slade album on the way over in the car. Love Felt, Dexys, I think, are amazing. You know, the Streets, and we've got some incredible music come out of the city at the moment. So the other thing to say is it's not all about looking back. It's about making that link to contemporary music making practices and some of the people coming out of this this region, you know, but again, thinking about Birmingham Lady Sanity, for example, you know, the next 60 years are going to be just as great as the last 60 years. And for me, it's about how do we collect that. So
who is inspiring you at the moment then?
In terms of music making, I love Sanity. She's a hip-hop rap person, a woman. I love Chartreuse, Mimi, Detroit, Bryony Williams, who's actually from Wolverhampton, Tarja Dusanya, who else?
Dawn Butler. Beverly Knight from Wolverhampton.
Beverly Knight from Wolverhampton, yeah. You've got so much history from Wolverhampton. You know, that we mentioned Slade, but Goldie, you know, from Wolverhampton and Warsaw sort of, and the graffiti history, his history with graffiti and bringing hip-hop into the city. There is some amazing, amazing talent currently at the moment. And just loads of great. Kyoko, great reggae band, Friendly Fire, just amazing sort of reggae sound system band, you know, started by a French guy who came to Birmingham because he saw Birmingham as the home of reggae, and he's now surrounded by these amazing sort of Afro-Caribbean and Brummies. It's a real mishmash, but there's some great music out there.
How would you say then our musical landscape in 2021 compares with the heyday of the 70s and 80s then? I mean, are there acts nowadays to compare with the likes of ELO or Led Zepp or UB40? We've just talked about bands that inspire you, but how would you pair bands up of those day, back in the day, with bands from today?
Well, music changes, isn't it? So, you know, I'm 52 now, so...
You don't look a day over 27.
I feel about 27 years older than the 52. So it changes. So, you know, I'm always wary about comparing. But if you think about the music, particularly that young people listen to, so let's just look at grime, and you think about someone like JK, who has, you know, tens of millions of followers, or Mist, who is touring the globe, or Lady Leisha, who's absolutely everywhere and gets, you know, 60, 70 million views on YouTube, then it completely compares. You know, they're not selling the same amount of records as Led Zeppelin or Sabbath did because the business has changed, you know, how people consume music. So it's slightly harder sometimes to say today is just as successful as yesteryear, or yesteryear is not as successful as today, because hey, we measure it. But there are massive stars in this city, or come from this city, who are doing huge things. I've just mentioned some. Mike Skinner is still massive, commanding huge fees. I mean, obviously Jeff Lynne is still recording music and still playing. So you still have some of those bands from yesteryear who are still active today. So for me, it's a continuum, that's why I say I think this city is unique, because I think, again, look, let's just use Manchester very quickly, but Manchester had an amazing period in the mid-70s through to the 90s with bands like Joy Division and New Order and The Smiths and The Fall. But I don't think they've had a sustained period like Birmingham. So, you know, if we go back to Andy Hamilton with his jazz, playing in the clubs in jazz, and then became a star at the age of 77 with his Silvershine album. Then you've got people like Suetto Kinch, who's going now, and Zosa Cole. So you've got this continuum in jazz. If you look at hip hop and rap, you've got, you know, from the early days, you've got people like Juice Aleem. Now you've got people like Lady Sanity. If you look at folk, you had the Ian Campbell folk group in the 60s, had the biggest folk club in the country. Now you've got someone like Catherine Priddy. So there's a real continuum across a whole range of genres that is, I think, unique and unrivaled from any other city. London is a outlier, it's on its own. But that's what's so exciting about this city. It continues to create music, and people continue to make music, and people continue to consume music.
Well, we consume it differently now. We don't necessarily go and buy CDs or whatever from shops. And I mean, there aren't many sort of what I call high street retailers around. There are specialist vinyl shops and places like that. But we consume a lot of music online. How does that affect how the industry works now? Is it better for us to consume it online, or can you not beat the footfall of going into a shop and picking up vinyl or CD? Because I like to do that. I don't buy music online.
Yeah, I buy a bit of music online, but I'm careful where I buy it. I buy it from things like Bandcamp or direct from artists, so most of the money goes back to them. So that's a really tricky question. If you spoke to the artists, streaming is a two-headed beast. It's great in terms of exposure. But if you're getting 200, 300, 400, 500,000 streams, you're getting, you know, 3 pence in your royalties. So by, you know, if you sold 500,000 albums or singles, you'd be getting a lot more. So exposure good, but actual in terms of payment for artists and sustaining artists, it's quite bad. So I'm very much like you. I try and buy direct from the artists, so I know the money goes directly to them. Live gigs was sustaining musicians. They've obviously struggled with the pandemic and not having that. So for a musician at the moment, it's very difficult. But yeah, for me, if you can, if you buy music, always try and buy direct from the artist.
Yes.
Or buy the physical product in a shop, because at least you know then they're going to get a cut of those royalties.
That's right. It's not come from some dodgy bootlegs.
Yes.
Very briefly then, tell me how we can get in touch with you and offer things for the museum or anything else that you need.
Brilliant. Well, that would be fantastic. And I welcome everything. Nothing is not important enough to be included in the archive of the museum. My email is jez@birminghammusicarchive.com. You can join the Facebook group, which is, if you use Facebook, it's Birmingham Music Archive. That's the group. You can get me on Twitter at Brum Music Picks or at Jez C. You can find me on Instagram at Jez Collins or at Birmingham Music Archive. So there are many ways to get in touch, or just Google Jez Collins Birmingham Music, and I'm sure I'll come up somewhere. So there's many ways to get in touch. I'd love to hear from people. I'm a bit slow getting back. It is just me, so bear with me. But I do get back. Yeah, for sure. But it's great.
Well, in 2025, I pledge this to you. When you are up and running and you're open, my radio other half, Dan Richards, and I will bring an outside broadcaster unit and we'll come and do a programme from you.
That would be fantastic. You'd be more than welcome.
Jez Collins from the Birmingham Music Archive. Thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That's your lot for this episode. You can catch the show live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you love our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast, presented by Clive Payne, production by Andy Caddick